Welcome to Health Cetera in the Catskills on WIOX Radio. I'm Diana Mason, the host of this program, where we focus on the impact of local, state, national, and global issues on the health of the individuals, families, and communities in the Catskill region. The state now has a law for medical aid in dying, providing people in this state with the option of ending their suffering from a terminal illness through medication to end their life. The law has a number of guardrails in place, but there is a lawsuit that has been filed to stop its implementation. And here to talk about the status of the law and this lawsuit itself is David Levin, Executive Director Emeritus and Senior Consultant of End of Life Choices New York. David, thank you for once again coming back on to Health Cetera in the Catskills to talk about this really important issue.
I'm happy to be back again, Diana. Thank you for having me.
So I want to first start with, you've been doing this work for a long time. I've lost count of how many times I've interviewed you on this or other radio programs to talk about this issue, and certainly, you know, many of us are really happy that this law finally passed this year. And I've thought about, you've had such a long involvement in this. What has moved you to continue to pursue this issue?
Well, I strongly believe that people should have a right to die on their own terms, and people should not have to endure unnecessary suffering at the end of their lives. And while there are certain ways in which people can now accelerate their death, such as never starting or stopping life-sustaining treatments, that is not necessarily the best way to end one's life. And so medical aid in dying is just another end-of-life option which should be available to people so that they can die relatively quickly and peacefully at a time and place of their choosing.
Yes. And it's been an issue of mine for a long time because I want that choice. I do want that choice.
Most Americans do, and most New York residents do as well.
So provide people with an overview of this law.
So the law allows a mentally competent, terminally ill patient, meaning someone who is likely to die within 6 months, the ability to request and receive a prescription for life-ending medicines to enable them to have a peaceful death, again, at a time and place of their choosing, if they decide to take the medications. There are a number of different requirements in order to access medical aid in dying. The patient must make an initial oral and written request to their physician. The oral request must be recorded, either by audio or video, kept in the patient's medical record to document voluntariness. There must be two witnesses to the written request, and both of those witnesses must make a determination that the patient appears to be terminally ill and decisionally capable, and neither of those witnesses can be a relative or anyone who might benefit from the patient's death. The attending physician must confirm the terminal diagnosis and make a determination that the patient has decision-making capacity. A second physician, characterized as a consulting physician in the law, must make the same determinations. The patient must also, in New York, unlike most other states, undergo a mental health evaluation by a psychologist, psychiatrist, or neurologist to confirm decision-making capacity. So there are all these initial safeguards, and then there's also a 5-day waiting period between the date when the prescription is written and when it can be filled. And this is intended as a cooling off period and extra safeguard, although it can be waived if the patient would undergo undue hardship, usually in a situation where they might die within the 5-day period. So if all the requirements are met and waiting periods observed, the physician may issue the prescription, and the patient must be able to self-administer the medication if they decide to take it at all. in about one-third of patients across the country in states where medical aid in dying is authorized, and there are now 14 jurisdictions, 13 states, and the District of Columbia, about 35% of patients never take the medications. And no one has to participate in this process. Healthcare providers and institutions, including individual practitioners, those with religious affiliations or otherwise, are not required to participate in any way. The law is going to take effect August 5th, 6 months after it was signed by Governor Hochul, after a press conference where she announced that she was going to sign it after struggling with the issue because of her devout Catholicism. But we are very happy that she ultimately did that, and we are very pleased that this is a very comprehensive, complex law which is going to benefit patients and really is not going to cause harm to anyone.
So, given this, the lawsuit has been filed to stop implementation of this. So, what are the arguments they're putting forth, and what would you say to those arguments?
Well, unfortunately, this lawsuit is being brought by some of the same groups that have brought other lawsuits, which have been ultimately dismissed, at least in three jurisdictions. They claim that this law discriminates against people with disabilities. They claim that there is going to be that the Americans with Disabilities Act is being violated because these safeguards are not sufficient enough, and they're challenging the law, saying that vulnerable people are just not going to be sufficiently protected from coercion, misdiagnosis, and medical bias, and they're concerned that people are not going to be able to get the kind of end-of-life care that they would otherwise be able to get if we did not have a medical aid in dying law. So those are essentially the claims that they've made in this case that was filed in the Eastern Federal District Court of New York, which is based in Brooklyn.
So my understanding is that many people who are disabled support this law, but the organizations that represent them are more hesitant. Is that the way you would characterize it?
Well, the vast majority of people with disabilities, in fact, do support the law, and some disability rights organizations are opposed. But then there are others which have been supportive, so but there are certainly a number of them which are opposed, and that's why the lawsuit has been filed.
Now, my understanding is that, and I'm not sure if it's the same group, but lawsuits have been filed in other states that have passed this law. Can you tell us about the lawsuits in other states that have medical aid in dying or have tried to have medical aid in dying?
Well, the lawsuits, again, are very similar, and the cases which have been decided have all been dismissed by the courts as not having sufficient merit. Those cases were brought in California, Colorado, and Delaware.
Interesting. And if this lawsuit did succeed, then what would happen? The law would no longer be valid?
That's correct, but that is so unlikely to happen. I would say there's about a 1% chance, frankly, of the lawsuit ultimately being successful. There are many reasons for this, because the lawsuit is, in my opinion, frivolous and just doesn't have any merit. They raise a number of concerns which can easily be responded to, and if I may, I'll just mention a couple of them. They raise the concern that patients will not receive adequate end-of-life care, and that's just completely unfounded. The attending physician who's going to be prescribing the medications must offer information and counseling about palliative and hospice care. He must also offer to refer the patient to other treatment options, including, again, not limited to palliative and hospice care. And in states that authorize medical aid in dying, about 90% of those who access this compassionate option are enrolled in hospice, usually considered the gold standard of end-of-life care. And that's compared to about 50% of people who die nationally who die in hospice, and only about 30% in New York. So, in fact, those dying patients who may or may not have had a pre-existing disability are going to very likely receive the best end-of-life care possible. And consider, too, though, that this is the Medical Aid in Dying Act really has no connection to people with disabilities. It is only for people who are terminally ill and have been determined to be in that situation where they are likely to die within 6 months. This is not a law which in any way impacts people with disabilities unless they just happen to have a pre-existing disability. Or you could pretend, I suppose, that people who are dying have disabilities. Many do, but some really don't. So there's really a disconnect there. And another thing is that although certainly legitimate concerns are raised about discrimination against people with disabilities prior to their being experienced with medical aid in dying, none of the problems expected have emerged anywhere in the United States, even though we've had laws now on the books for 30 years, just about in Oregon, and decades in other states as well. And in fact, as far as we know, there's not been one substantiated finding of abuse or coercion by any court. So I think it's really fair to say medical aid in dying laws have worked as intended, including for people with disabilities, which may be the reason why, as you suggested, that the majority of those with disabilities support them. Mm-hmm. And the Americans with Disabilities Act really, of course, seeks to empower those with disabilities to make the same kinds of voluntary decisions as anyone else, providing that they have decision-making capacity. In my view, lawsuit seeks to take that right away. And I am very happy, I think it's extremely fortunate, that those with disabilities who are terminally ill and decisionally capable will soon be able to make a voluntary decision to choose to have a peaceful death with medical aid in dying.
So, David, in preparation for implementation, which I believe is supposed to start in August, you and others have been trying to get the word out about the details of the law. And I'm wondering, as you do that and talk to people, talk to the public, as well as health professionals who would be, for example, the physicians who would be involved in this, and they're not forced to do this, to provide the medication or what have you, but what are you hearing about concerns that people have? Are you hearing that there were people who were concerned but are now feeling like their concerns were addressed? Are there other concerns that are arising? What are you hearing?
I think what's happened over the last 10 years since the law was first, or the bill was first introduced in the New York State Legislature, and I asked my legislator, my assembly member, Amy Pollan, to introduce it, which she did. There's been so much education during that time frame that many of the concerns that people once had, they no longer have, because they have recognized that both in other states that authorize medical aid in dying and in our bill, there are such sufficient safeguards that there are really very little, there's not much to be concerned about. And if you think about all of the safeguards that are in the law, those statutory safeguards don't apply when someone decides that they want to hasten their death by never starting or by stopping life-sustaining treatment, whether it's dialysis or feeding tube or antibiotics or stopping pacemaker. Now, there should, of course, always be some kind of process to ensure that there's nothing more that could be done to improve the quality of life of the patient. But still, we don't have a those kind, same kinds of safeguards that we have for medical aid in dying. So I think a lot of the concerns really no longer exist that once did. And in fact, when you look at physicians, a poll was done some years ago now that showed that physicians in New York who had looked at the Medical Aid in Dying Act supported by a 3-to-1 margin. And so we have, obviously, a lot more education is needed because there are so many healthcare professionals, doctors, nurses, social workers, chaplains, and so forth, who just aren't aware of what is entailed in the law. So they do need to be educated. And we have started a process at End of Life Choices in New York, the organization that I've been working with now for since 2002, for 24 years, to ensure that we're going to be doing as much education work as possible to educate both healthcare professionals as well as citizens. But there are some concerns that people still raise. For example, they think that vulnerable populations might be at risk and people might be abused or coerced. And again, that concern was quite understandable before there was evidence. But in fact, there's been no disproportionate impact in the use of medical aid in dying on vulnerable populations, whether it's the poor, people of color, people with disabilities, or the elderly. And that's been shown by one report that was issued a number of years ago. And there are no contrary findings or studies to our knowledge, no findings at all, really. There was a concern about there being a slippery slope that would eventually allow patients who are not terminally ill to access medical aid in dying. And that is an understandable concern, but it's just pure speculation, at least in this country. While Canada does allow access to medical aid in dying for people who have a progressive and terrible illness, no such law like that exists in any of the 14 jurisdictions in the United States. And as far as I know, there are no bills pending to allow that to happen. So, and the only way that it could happen, of course, is either through legislation or through court decisions. And when it comes to legislation, it's really difficult enough just to get medical aid in dying laws enacted only for people who are terminally ill and who will soon die. So when it comes to court decisions, there's been no higher state court decision that has indicated that medical aid in dying is a state constitutional right, and the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that it was not a federal constitutional right in 1997. So I think that that concern about slippery slope is really one which is not substantiated at all by anything that's happened in this country over the last 30 years since Oregon first enacted its medical aid in dying law.
You know, David, there's something, an issue that has intrigued me for a number of years. I don't think I've ever articulated it. Maybe I have, but I'm reminded of this because last night I was watching a program on cable TV. I love the veterinary programs. And the incredible Dr. Paul was euthanizing a horse. And yeah, it was clearly a very difficult decision for the owner. And I have really struggled with, we don't want the people we love to suffer. Now, this is not a euthanasia issue here with the medical aid in dying. The person has to want it. So in this case, the horse would have had to want it. And so why are we so reluctant, do you think, to have that kind of empathy for the animals that we love? But we don't have that same empathy for each other and ourselves, maybe our loved ones.
Well, I think the empathy may be there. It's just a concern about how medical aid in dying is administered. And in this country, people have to self-administer the drugs themselves. Whereas with, as you said, animals, they can be euthanized. And that is permissible in Canada. So about 99% of people in Canada who died under their medical aid in dying law, actually have it done by doctors. They do not have to self-ingest the medication.
Oh, that's interesting.
They are much more progressive than we are. We have a long religious and cultural history that suggests that we are somewhat more conservative than other countries, which is why I think we do not yet, although I hope we will eventually, have a national law which allows medical aid in dying, as do a number of other countries around the world.
Or, you know, the idea that I don't have to be terminally ill and dying in 6 months to be able to do this. I've often thought if I were diagnosed with dementia, that at some point before I totally lose it, I don't want to be in this world. I don't want to be sitting in a nursing home with no understanding of where I am, maybe being fed whether I want to eat or not, kept alive for what purpose. So I hope that we will someday get to the point where if I decide the quality of my life is important enough to me that my future looks very bleak, and before I have no control over it, I want to end my life. We're all going to die anyway, and how much suffering we experience before that happens, for me, is a huge issue.
As I think it should be, Diane, and for all of us. Yeah. And we should all be able to die on our own terms.
Yes.
And especially if we are terminally ill or if we have advanced dementia and we would not want to be hand-fed if we had that dementia. But even if you have early stage dementia in this country, you can make a decision, although it might be premature for most people in that situation, to voluntarily stop eating and drinking. And that is an end-of-life option that is available to anyone. It's legal. Why? As a matter of bodily autonomy. You cannot force anyone to eat or drink if they have decision-making capacity. So, but you're right. Our laws should be more advanced than they are to ensure that people with advanced dementia particularly do not have to continue to suffer, especially when they're in a situation where they're bedridden, no longer communicate, and don't appear to be appear to have any good quality of life.
Well, David Levin, I'm really grateful to you and others who have been advocates for the medical aid in dying law that was passed in New York State. I am looking forward to this lawsuit failing and to us being able to implement this law coming in August, and we'll stay on top of this. I think the more informed people can be, the more comfortable they'll feel about this being a choice for them. No one will make you to do this. It's your choice. So David Levin, Executive Director Emeritus and Senior Consultant of End of Life Choices New York, thank you so much for coming back on to Health Celdra in the Catskills again and for all of your great work.